This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus in the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Drew and Richard away today. Thanks again to Richie for doing this Saturday spotlight with Marty Biron. I'm Matt Leibel from The Big Show in the host chair today. It's a pleasure. On the left, Dave Minuk. On the right, Ezzy Ginsberg. On the board, Michael, the trash talker, Remus. Did a little trash talking in the break. Speaking of trash talking, Patrick Waugh knows a thing or two about that. Marty Brodeur knows a thing or two about that as well. Pierre Maguire probably knows a thing or two about that. He's usually on the wrong end of the trash talking. But Pierre Maguire joined TSN 1050 earlier this week and had some interesting comments on potentially the relationship between Waugh and Brodeur and what that might mean for the Colorado Avalanche. Reem, play the clip.
That's what it was going to take, something like this. But here's the one caveat to that. I don't know, and nobody really knows, and it's just a question, what's the relationship like between Patrick Waugh and Marty Brodeur?
Yeah.
That's the key. Because for a long time, those guys found a way to not acknowledge one another for whatever reason. I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, there was not a lot of acknowledgement between the two of them. So we'll see what if in fact they have interest in him, what the relationship's like.
Do you guys think right off the bat, that there is interest? I mean, Varlamov's on the IR with a groin injury. I'm always leery of groin injuries. So I believe you were saying, Dave, that Patrick Waugh said that if it were the playoffs, Varlamov would play.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. And then Rito Baro gets run over. I mean, we saw Picard and Colorado. Look, if they get off to a rough start, it could be a long season for the Avalanche with the expectations they created after last year's worst to first. So what do you think of this whole Brodeur, Patrick Waugh business in Colorado?
I don't know. I just don't know that it's going to happen. I mean, I think it would be rather humorous that, you know, the guy who was smashing Waugh's records would be coming in and being coached by Patrick Waugh. Like, you know, it would be very ironic. But I just don't see it happening long term just because I don't think that the Varlamov injury is very serious. So based on that, and I just don't see that situation setting itself up to have Brodeur go in there personally.
As you're a huge Devils fan, anyone who knows this show knows that you love the Devils, you love Brodeur. Would you love to see him with Colorado? Do you think he'll be in Colorado?
I don't think it'll happen, but it's I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility, and this is why I think it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. I think you look at Semyon Varlamov, and he had 40-plus wins last year, and he had an excellent season, obviously, and he was a huge part of why the Avalanche won the division.
He had Hart Trophy consideration last year.
He was definitely even in the Hart Trophy consideration, absolutely. And you look at Rito Baro, who was absolutely run over in the game against the Ottawa Senators by Kyle Turris. And to me, if he's out for a significant amount of time, are you going to go with Calvin Pickard as your backup goalie? And he has very little NHL experience.
Winnipegger, by the way.
And he is a Winnipegger, and he's played in the AHL predominantly in his pro career. So you look at them and Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh, and do they want to go with him? Are they confident enough in him as a backup? And you could make an argument that they would be, and it also depends on Rito Baro's injury status. But Marty Brodeur, guys, as we know, has not officially retired. And he's not going to be playing for the Devils this year because they brought in Scott Clemenson. And, you know, the thinking is if Marty Brodeur wants a management position, front office position with the Devils, it's his. Lou Lamoriello would give him a front office position just because of what he's done for the franchise, the relationship that he has. Dave, you remember when we were in Newark, Marty Brodeur was able to draft his son. That was a really classy thing that Lou Lamoriello let Marty Brodeur do. But, guys, Marty Brodeur, he still thinks that he can play. So Colorado, if you look at the teams around the league, there was kind of a talk about him maybe going to Minnesota, but the way Darcy Kemper's played, you know, it's kind of quashed those thoughts. So I don't think it's going to happen, but it has a lot to do with Rito Baro's long-term health, I think. But Pickard, it looks like they're going to go with him.
Doesn't it also have a lot to do with how much money they'd want to give Brodeur?
Like, yeah.
I mean, he'd have to be reasonable and take a severe pay. Wasn't he making four or four and a half or something like that last year?
It's like New Jersey? When Dave comes on Illegal Curve, he doesn't just come on for free. We got to pay him. So, I mean, Marty Brodeur, he's not going to do this for pro bono, right? So
dollar bills, y'all.
It's an interesting thing to think about. For now, the talk is very quiet, but we'll keep an eye on it because Colorado, like everyone knows, like here in Winnipeg, we know you get off to a rough start, it could be a very long season. And with Varlamov hurt, who knows? Maybe Patrick Waugh, Martin Brodeur could find their way to be working together in Colorado. We'll break. When we return for the final segment of hour number two, Milan Lucic, obscene gestures, possible distractions? We'll discuss. Drew is gone. Richie, also gone. It's Ezzy, it's Dave, and it's Libel on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yemlin takes a big hit, and Lucic, they go to the box. The puck is loose in front. Lucic may have ducked the elbow up on Yemlin, and the Canadiens will get a late power play with a one-goal lead. Listen to the fans.
That was Thursday night. Habs beat the Bruins 6-4 in their first meeting this season between those Atlantic Division rivals. And I'm with you, Ez. That is the best rivalry in the NHL right now. There's no question about it.
If you go to Montreal, and I was just there less than 2 years ago.
Little Schwartz's. Gotta go to Little Schwartz's.
Always. You have to always go there.
Just we're going to get, not too far off topic, but what kind of meat do you get? Because they let you decide. Do you want the lean? Do you want the extra lean? Do you want the fatty? What do you get? What do you do? You're a connoisseur. What do you do at Schwartz's?
I like to go lean.
Nice.
Even though I'm not lean right now, but I like to go lean. But yeah.
Okay, I got you off topic. Okay, yeah, Montreal, yeah. You go to Montreal, yeah. Schwartz is a little, lean, yeah.
And the thing is, like, hopefully everyone has been to Montreal, or if not, I think it's the greatest city aside from Winnipeg in Canada. You look at...
Never been to Prince George, but whatever.
Absolutely. Flin Flon's not bad either. But when you're talking about Montreal, Maddie, and you're there, and you're walking around and at the bars and everything, in Montreal, they hate the Bruins more than they hate the Leafs. A lot of people think, you know, it's the Leafs, but lately, it's the Bruins. And that goes back to, you know, Chara's hit on Pacioretty and all that. But in Habsville, it's the Bruins that are the number one rival.
So Joe Haggerty, Hacks with Hags, reported, these are the comments that Milan Lucic said afterwards. He said the gestures in Montreal were selfish and apologized to his team for embarrassing them. And the good fans, in quotes, in Montreal, said it was a selfish act. I think it takes away from all the positives from the game. I'm obviously not proud of what I did. And he said, I know the Canadian fans can get under your skin sometimes, but they are great fans. They are what make the games fun.
Milan Lucic made it's difficult to describe on air. He made an obscene gesture, somewhat sexual in nature, when he was in the penalty box after that elbow on Yemlin.
Towards the end of the game.
He was fined $5,000 for it.
That was the max.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's a whole other conversation about how you're going to deter these guys from doing stuff like that when you basically fine them a quarter for what they make. But and then he came out and apologized, and those were the comments that Lucic made.
And then Coach Julian said, his emotions sometimes get the better of him. To his defense, I think penalty was really tough call we don't agree with. And things with Milan is having ability to control motions, so it doesn't hurt the game, doesn't hurt the fans, and doesn't hurt our hockey club.
You and I play on the House of A, the Jewish men's slow pitch team that I reference quite often on the big show, which I'm a part of here on Monday to Friday at 6 to 11 a.m. But I bring it up just because there's another team in our league that one of our strategies, and we faced them a couple times in the playoffs. Last year we beat them in the finals. This year they got us in the semis. One of our ideas has always been get inside their heads, let them self-destruct, because there's a couple guys on that team that are kind of... what's the word I'm looking for? They can,
they can get a little crazy.
Well, they have these moments where they lose focus of the game. They can't compartmentalize, and if you get them, their emotions run high. The reason I bring this conversation up is it seems that the Bruins, Milan Lucic being a leading example, but Tuukka Rask also. There's something about the Canadiens and their fans and the Canadiens players and this matchup and this rivalry that prevents the Bruins from being able to focus and play their game. We saw it in the playoffs last year, guys. We saw it on Thursday night. Tuukka Rask looks so different when he plays this one team. Milan Lucic looks so different when he plays this one team. I think there's serious concern for the Bruins going down the line, because if they meet in the playoffs again, the Habs are going to they're just going to try and get in their heads, and it's not going to be about hockey as much as personalities and emotions.
I agree. And the Montreal Canadiens have the Boston Bruins number right right now. And I know some people didn't have a problem with what Milan Lucic did. You know, he's getting into the game and he's showing emotion and all that. I don't think it necessarily reflects badly on the team. I think it reflects badly on himself. And I think he's had a couple of tough years here with the handshake incident and all that. And again, this is going back to the playoffs last year. And I remember, you know, talking to Drew and Richie about this on a legal curve. And, you know, Richie didn't have a problem with it because he was showing his emotions. But it was, in my opinion, definitely in poor taste to kind of have that type of comment to Dale Weiss and the Montreal Canadiens. And I think it maybe was not a coincidence that Dale Weiss didn't play a couple of nights ago, and it was Travis Moen who they put into the lineup for the Montreal Canadiens against the Boston Bruins. But I agree with you. I think that you look at this rivalry, and right now these are two top teams in the Eastern Conference. As we know, guys, the Eastern Conference is a weaker conference, and there's a good chance that these teams meet again in the playoffs this year. And I think the NHL and fans are hoping for that. But you look at that game, and obviously the Montreal Canadiens were out on top 6-4. But Milan Lucic, you know, this is a guy who's only played for one team. He's been on the Boston Bruins for 8 years now. He's an excellent player. He's one of those, like, Cam Neely mold type of players. The guy can score 25 goals, and he can hit, and he can fight. The guy is a man mountain. Like, would you want to fight Milan Lucic? The guy is huge, and he can back it up. He can back it up with his talk and his fists. If he needs to fight, he'll fight. But to me, I saw that, and I kind of said, like, he needs to check his head a little bit. Like, you know the Montreal fans are going to get at you. Just ignore it. I mean, these are pro hockey players. These guys, and I know, you know, hockey's a game of emotion, and you see this type of stuff, and you know, maybe I'm just looking at it maybe from the perspective of Montreal, loving Montreal fans and knowing that they can get under players' skin. But I think it can absolutely be a distraction, and I think we've seen that. And for a player like Lucic, and guys, the Bruins are off to a bad start here. They've only won two of their first six games. They've only got 11 goals in six games. They're not putting the puck in the net. A guy like Lucic is counted on to score goals. And so, I mean, but at the end of the day, it's just good theater, right?
I think the Habs had the Bruins seeing red on Thursday, and I think that it's just such a fantastic game to watch. I mean, you couldn't not watch that game and just get excited. I mean, think about how early it is in the season, and we're already excited to watch a Boston-Montreal game.
It's very interesting because 2 years ago in the playoffs, the Senators were doing the same sort of thing to the Habs, and the Habs got over that this year. Remember? This
yes.
past season. Now the Bruins need to get over it because it needs to be about the hockey. They can be a better hockey team, but like you said, as Montreal, they're in their heads. They own them right now.
I think it's the closest thing that we've seen to the Colorado-Detroit rivalry of the late 90s, mid-90s.
Nice. You need to come to see some more Jewish men slow pitch. See some heated rivals. By the way, how did Remus's team do this year?
Huh? How'd they do, Reem?
Same as your team.
sorry, I couldn't hear you. My championship rings were plugging my ears.
Back-to-back championship rings.
That's right. Slam dunk. That does it for hour number two. When we come back, speaking of the Habs, let's get the Montreal perspective on their fans, on the Bruins. Amanda Stein, TSN 690. It's time for Stein. On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, one more hour to go when we come back. Ezzy, Dave, and Matt with you on TSN 129.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I believe this is the part of the show where Drew Mandel says 2 hours down, 1 hour to go.
I think so.
Yep, I'm Matt Leibel in for Drew today. Richie's gone as well. We got Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus on the board. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on a Saturday here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Thank you for joining us. You can hit us up on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, at ICEZG, at ICDave, at MRemus. I'm at Matt Leibel. Great Twitter conversation. Coming up later this hour, Michael Trakos of the National Post. Conversation about the Toronto Maple Leafs, Jake Gardner, goalie controversies. Of course, we end the show with rapid firing, cheers and jeers, all that coming up later. But in the last segment of hour number two, we were talking a little Montreal, we were talking a little Schwartz's. So why not head out to the Belle Province? It's time for Stein on the ice.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Time for Stein with TSN 690's Amanda Stein. Amanda, how are you on this fine Sabbath?
I like that. That was a cool intro.
Time for Stein. You like that, huh?
I like it. I do. I may steal it. I'm just letting you know right now. As long as you haven't copywritten it yet.
No, I just came up with it. It's fantastic. I mean, they only let me do this like about once every 6-7 months, so I have to try and find one golden nugget and then go with it.
There it is. I just drove by Schwartz's like a couple minutes ago, actually.
Oh, and?
There's a nice long line, as there always is. Everyone getting ready for their smoke meat, or hoping at least to get in there to get a nice bite of a sandwich, or a whole sandwich.
Amanda, when you go, do you go with the lean, the extra lean, to get a little fatty? What's your choice?
I go the extra lean. That's just my, and normally I have to like take the whole sandwich apart. I don't really eat it as a sandwich. I eat it as sort of a mess on my plate.
Good stuff. Fries?
On occasion, a pickle. I do enjoy the pickles.
Okay, you know what? I just realized, looking at the clock, that I could probably single-handedly do 12 minutes with you on Schwartz's and on other culinary delights. But I think it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we do want to get into the Habs. And in the last segment, we were also talking about the Montreal-Boston rivalry and just how we just think it's the best rivalry in the NHL right now. Would you agree from the Montreal perspective that the Habs seem to be in the Bruins' heads, at least a number of their players, like Milan Lucic, Tuukka Rask, and the Bruins are rattled every time these two teams seem to get together? And for Boston to make any kind of ground, they're going to have to manage to find a way to put their emotions in check.
Absolutely, 100%. It is the best rivalry, not only for the Montreal Canadiens, but for in the league, I would say. And yeah, there's this shift that's happened in the last couple of years where there was a time where Boston constantly had Montreal's numbers. But as Montreal has gotten better, it seems like Boston has sort of stayed the same and tried to continue to play that bullying type of game against Montreal that they can't do anymore. And we're seeing it, whether it be it last year in the playoffs in the 7-game series or just, you know, a couple days ago on Thursday with Montreal's home opener. If Montreal sticks to their game plan, there's nothing that rattles the Boston Bruins more than Montreal Canadiens sticking to their own game plan and not getting involved in all that. And you know, like a guy like Milan Lucic, you mentioned it. It seems like there's nothing that gets under his skin more than A, Montreal winning, and B, Montreal doing it handily. And you know, the Lucic story goes back, you know, several years, and of course in the playoffs, in the handshake line, and, you know, what kind of set him off last year in the handshake line was Andrei Markov saying, you know, look me in the eye when you're going to shake my hand, and then the words he had to Dale Wiest, apparently saying that, you know, I'm going to get you, I'm going to kill you, and now a fine gesture to the Montreal crowd in the last game and over all the boos. But is there anything like it? Absolutely not. Would I have it any other way? Absolutely not. It is one of my most favorite games to attend. And anyone, any hockey fan, that's what I always say. If you want to experience hockey at its best, that's the type of game you want to see, a Montreal-Boston series. And I don't buy Milan Lucic's apology, by the way.
Well, explain that.
Because actions speak louder than words, and it's not, you know, the first time that he's done something like this. And you know, unfortunately, you can say I'm sorry and I apologize and I didn't mean to disrespect over and over again, but the fact of the matter is that this is a guy who continuously does these types of things, whether it be to the players, to the fans, and until he stopped doing it. And even his team, you know, Cam Neely was on our station on TSN 690 leading up to the game on Thursday. They, you know, they had to talk to him a bit about, you know, respecting the game and how, and, you know, the way he needs to behave, maybe keep it a little cooler. And he doesn't. And so until we see an improved behavior, I don't buy those apologies. He has to say, I'm sorry. What else is he going to say?
You know what? I completely agree with you. I don't think that sometimes, you know, your actions obviously do speak louder than words. And it's not the first time that he's ticked off Montreal Canadiens fans. That's a loose term, but moving away from Milan Lucic and back to the Montreal Canadiens, because the Montreal Canadiens are off to a pretty good start. Wanted to talk to you about P.A. Parenteau. He obviously came over from the Colorado Avalanche, and he's now playing on the second line with Thomas Plekanec and Alex Galchenyuk, who still can't seem to play his natural center position. But what have your impressions been of P.A. Parenteau so far in the first few games in Montreal?
I think he's been fitting in really well. Of course, he's got 2 goals. He's doing well. You know, we haven't seen him much at home yet, but again, in that first game, not a bad game for him. I like the way he's fitting in, and I guess the most important thing is if you look at the trade that happened, it was him for Danny Briere. And Parenteau seems to be a guy so far anyways that Michel Therrien trusts a lot more than he did Briere. And so effectively, when you're on a line as well with Plekanec and Galchenyuk, you're going to be able to put up some points. These are two really smart players, one more of a veteran, one more of a younger guy just finding his way in the league. But I like the way so far that Parenteau has fit in with this team, and I think he really complements his line very well.
We're in conversation with Amanda Stein of TSN 690 in Montreal here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra, Dave, and Matt with you on this Saturday afternoon here in Winnipeg. Amanda, the Montreal Canadiens, this is something that some of my colleagues on another show and I don't agree on, and I want to get your perspective. The loss of Brian Gionta, I don't see that as mattering very much, even though he wore the C. There's enough leadership evidenced by the fact that four guys wear the A, right? But Josh Georges, how important was Josh Georges to the locker room with this team, and how much of a setback is losing this guy in terms of the leadership as the Canadiens? Hey, they almost went to the Stanley Cup final last year. How important is Georges to the team and the fact that he's not there anymore?
I'm so glad you asked this question, because on my station, I get a lot of flack for it. I actually didn't care that Brian Gionta and Josh Georges left, because maybe some people don't believe this, but I believe leadership is replaceable, whether it's in the locker room or on the ice. Fact of the matter is, it is replaceable. And yes, you know, you do tend to miss Josh Georges' block shots, maybe, but there are guys who they brought in who can take those types of roles. And when it comes to inside the locker room and the type of guy he was, well, certainly that's always missed. He was very close with a lot of the guys. He had Brendan Gallagher lived with him for a couple of years, so that was a big change there. But I think they brought in guys as well who can fill those types of roles. And you saw this shift in the locker room where the older guys were sort of more the quieter guys, and you have this influx of young players, as we see, like you mentioned, with the four assistants, with Max Pacioretty, PK Subban. Listen, these are voices that are going to be heard eventually, and I just feel that it's more of just fast-tracking it by getting rid of Josh Georges. And at the number that he was being paid, his salary cap hit was just so high for what he brought. Not that he didn't bring a lot, but there was other ways they had to go. And in terms of defensemen in particular, we have a lot of young guys in the Montreal system that needed a chance. So I was fine with the departure of them, because I really do believe that leadership is something that is easily replaceable.
Amanda, you know, it's still early here, but the Montreal Canadiens are obviously off to a good start. They've won four of their first five games. You've got the Colorado Avalanche in Montreal tonight. When you look at this team, and this team has obviously had some success last year going to the conference finals against the New York Rangers, and they obviously want to get back there. When you look at the team as compared to last year and the team that was able to go far in the playoffs, to you, what's maybe the biggest question mark on this team, maybe something that needs to be addressed as the season progresses?
That's an interesting question, because I think...
I only ask interesting questions, by the way, Amanda.
I know. That's why. You keep me on my toes. It's cool. It's great. I mean, I'm looking forward to... Maybe it's not so much a question mark, but I'm looking forward to seeing the dynamic between Carey Price and Dustin Tokarski and how that sort of plays out in terms of who gets allocated however many games. I think when you look at it, it might be a bit of the defense. You know, you've got some new guys there and some young guys. You have, you know, Tom Gilbert, who came in, who I think it's going to be a sort of love-hate relationship with the Montreal crowd, just the way he plays. And then you have the Jared Tenortis and the Nathan Beaulieus. I think going into this season, it was how a younger defense might handle a lot of these bigger minutes that they weren't necessarily getting last year. So far, it seems to be okay, but Michel Therrien is saying just yesterday that defensively, he hopes that this team does continue to get better, and not just in terms of the defensive pairings, but as a unit, as everyone on the ice together. That's the biggest concern that he's seen so far up until this point, even though they are getting those victories. And that's a good thing to have. It's a good problem to have, because there's this problem, so to speak, yet you're still winning the game.
So, Amanda, the Stanley Cup drought in Canada has gone on and on and on, and it looks like all eyes are on Montreal, because the expectations are that this team can be the team that ends that drought. How likely is that to happen this season?
I don't think that they're quite there yet, but I certainly think that they can make a run in the postseason, much that they did last year as well. And I think if they had made it to the Stanley Cup Finals last season, I think they would have had their derrières handed to them by the LA Kings. But they're getting there. And one thing that I really like is that this year we're seeing Thomas Pekanik in a more not only a bigger leadership role, but a more offensive role. And normally we see him as, you know, a defensive type of forward, and he's been, you know, lauded on that. And this year he's getting more and more opportunity because of the insertion of Andy Malhotra into the lineup. You know, Thomas Lekanic, 4 goals, 3 assists. So I think they have more balanced scoring. And, I mean, listen, if you're talking about who's the closest in Canada to getting to the Stanley Cup, I would have to say Montreal. It's certainly not Calgary, I can tell you that much, or the Leafs. But I don't think it's this year, but I think this is a big, you know, as last postseason was, this year is a big year to build that confidence towards getting there. And Marc Bergevin said it himself a couple of days ago on TSN 690 as well, that they're not quite an elite team yet, but I think they fast-tracked themselves a little bit further down the line because of that run that they went on last year that surprised, you know, maybe even themselves, as it did a lot of people in Montreal. That's valuable experience in terms of getting back to the dance.
Amanda, Yuri Sakach got his first NHL goal against the Boston Bruins, and it was super cool to see his parents at the Bell Center able to celebrate that goal with him. I haven't seen him play much. Obviously, I don't. I have NHL center ice, but I don't have the Russian equivalent, so I haven't seen him play in the KHL. But in 5 games so far and following the team, what have you seen out of Yuri Sakach playing on that third line?
I think in preseason we saw a brilliant Yuri Sakach, for sure. And I think at the beginning of the regular season, although I guess we still are kind of there just a couple of games in, it looked like he was taking a little more time to adjust. And whether it's a matter of he got his first goal and now the floodgates can open, because I didn't see him before preseason either. I couldn't find online all the KHL highlights of Yuri Sakach, but I think it's a bit of an adaption process for him. And he's getting there, and he's got teammates to help him get there with Eller and Bork, and they seem to be developing a nice chemistry. But certainly he's really quick on his feet. He's got that speed, and if you're going to play for the Montreal Canadiens, that's the way to endear yourself.
Amanda, speaking of a player who played for the Montreal Canadiens, who's now in our system, the Peter Budaj trade earlier this season, what should Jets fans know about Peter Budaj?
That he is a brilliant backup. He is the type of backup any team would want on their squad. The relationship between him and Carey Price was exactly what you needed when you knew that there was a solidified number one goaltender. Now, of course, I guess maybe in Winnipeg it's a little bit different because Pavlich maybe not as solidified as Carey Price is here, but he is the ultimate team guy. I can tell you, in all the years that Peter Budaj was here in Montreal, I never once heard a bad word about Peter Budaj, even just walking by guys talking, you know, off the record, nothing. No one has ever said a bad word about him, and he is that type of guy. He'll be the first guy on the ice. He'll be a hard-working guy. He'll work with young kids. He'll, you know, stay out with the vets if they want. He is the perfect backup you can have. Was that, like, well-received out in Winnipeg?
It wasn't so much a thing about received, Amanda. It was just very curious because the backup here is Michael Hutchinson, who has very little NHL experience. And as you know, the Jets ended up actually waiving Budaj to try and send him down to the AHL, and he cleared waivers and went down. So it was more kind of a conversation about the netminders in general. No one's really had a chance to talk to Peter Budaj. He never came to Winnipeg. He went straight to St. John's.
Yeah, I mean, he's the ultimate team guy, and I know, like, you know, teams throw that word around a lot, and it's a nice cliche to use, but really, if you looked up the definition, that would be Peter Budaj, and he's reliable for a good few games, but if you put, you know, I think he's, you know, towards the latter part of his career and his ability, and you know, you don't want him playing 60 games, but when he needs to be called upon, he did a fine job for Montreal in a sparingly kind of way. But I think when you looked at the playoffs last year, when Carey Price went down with his injury in game one against the New York Rangers, it said a lot as well that they went with Dustin Tokarski and his abilities over Peter Budaj's. And that's the sort of the writing on the wall for Peter here. But certainly, if you want to talk about a great backup to have who won't ruffle any feathers, that's your guy around the league that you want.
Great stuff, Amanda. That's all the time for Stein that we have right here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But as always, great insight from Montreal, and we'll do this again soon.
You got it. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Thanks a lot, Amanda.
Take care.
What's her Twitter? Amanda C. Stein. At right. Amanda C. Stein. STEIN. Dave, you didn't get a chance to ask her about that keeping up with the Steins question. I thought you were going
to
ask her.
We had good flow. I didn't need to interrupt it, but just to get in a little quip.
Speaking of good flow, anybody catch Olli Jokinen last night? What is up with the hair?
Remus tweeted out that he wanted to know who had better hair, Thorbs or Olli Jokinen. I think it's not even close. I think Thorbs has the hair of a Greek god.
Hence the Greek god line. But he was on in Atlanta.
Oh, right.
Can you name the other two members of the Greek god line?
No.
I know Ezzy can.
It was Slater.
Yep.
And Eric Bolton.
The last guy to score a hat trick for this franchise.
Ironically enough, none of them are Greek.
Right.
But it must have been just because of Thorbs' hair.
Possibly.
Like, Thorbs has such great hair, they just called it the Greek god line.
Actually, I think one of them might be Greek. But I don't know which one.
Interesting, you talk about Thorbs, but he was on the third line last night. Didn't have the greatest game. Won't be on the third line tomorrow night, because if you're just joining us here on IC, shuffle Jets lines. Quickly, before we go to break, Little going to center a line with Ladd and Bufflin. Shifley going to center a line with Wheeler and Perreault. Adam Lowry going to center on the third line. Get that. Gagliardi on his left, Frolik on his right. Slater with Peluso and Thorburn on the fourth line. So the Jets trying to make something happen. End of three games losing skid tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, against the Calgary Flames, live on TSN 1290. When we come back, what's going on in Toronto? Carlisle v. Gardner and Reimer v. Bernier. Lots of controversy to talk about. Later this hour, we'll have Michael Trakos from the National Post, but we'll set up that conversation when we return. Dave, Ezzy, Matt, Remus. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday. It is a Saturday. It is a Saturday on TSN 1290, which means the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shuffled lines today, like the Jets. I'm Matt Leibel here from the Big Show with Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Thanks again to Amanda Stein from TSN 690 in Montreal. Joined us in the last segment. She tweeted that, too bad we ran out of time to talk about her POG collection. And we spent the break reminiscing, but also kind of seeking advice from our producer, Michael Remus, just exactly what the story with POGs was.
Yeah, I don't remember playing POGs, but I guess we could have Amanda back on.
Sometime.
No, as he means right now.
We could do like play POGs live on air.
That I'm going to say is going to be thrilling radio. But maybe not. I think there's a visual component.
Yeah, and Remus claims that he played POGs. I remember collecting hockey cards, and I don't remember POGs, but Remus can jump on here and explain to us what a POG is.
You know what POGs are?
I mean, we have a little bit of time.
Is my microphone even working right now?
Yeah, you're on.
Yeah, so you got these POGs. They're like these little circle things. You line them, you stack them all together, and then you throw down a slammer, and whichever POGs turn upside down, you got to keep.
But how do you know whose POGs are whose?
You just know.
But how many POGs would line up?
I don't know. We'd alternate. So maybe I'd put five of mine and five of yours alternating.
I don't get it.
What were POGs, like plastic kind of like?
Yeah,
like
it was just
cards,
plastic.
Right?
Miniature coasters
I indicate my age, but.
I was going to say the line so that you didn't have to say it. But the funniest part of the break was that Dave goes, Dave's a little bit older than us, not a lot, but Dave says, I'm going to show my age, but I don't remember POGs, I do remember marbles.
Centennial School, Kimberly and Main Street. Hey, no, Kingsbury.
If you're not that much older than I remember playing a little marbles.
Hey, we used to play Pugs. He was called
Marbles.
Well,
I mean, look, guys, at the end of the day, we all know one thing. Drew's about 75 years older than all of us.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, we always have that.
Drew just played stickball.
Yeah.
Ball and a stick.
Yeah.
Back in the 30s.
Oh, okay.
During the Great Depression.
Amazing. Okay.
The Great Drew Depression.
So speaking of.
Oh, man.
Speaking of old school. Randy Carlisle is a coach who's often been described as being old school.
Randy Carlisle.
But what about the way handling Jake Gardner, who the Leafs, if I'm not mistaken, signed to a pretty lengthy and sizable contract extension in the offseason? Right? I did see that correctly. That did happen. And yet, through four or five games here for the Leafs, he's been in street clothes for like half of them.
5-year, $20.25 million.
Right. And he's what now, 23? I think he's 23.
Yeah, 24. Yeah.
Clearly, Carlisle wants more from him. And early on in the season, if you listen to any sports radio or watch any sports TV coming out of Toronto, half the conversations are about Reimer and Bernier. The other half of the conversations are about Jake Gardner and Randy Carlisle. And we're going to talk to Michael Tracos in the next segment, who covers the Leafs for the National Post. We'll get some insight from him. But just from you guys, the whole Gardner situation, what do you guys make of it?
I think, by the way, that Jake Gardner has tons of talent. I think he's a good skater. He can move the puck. The strength of his game is the offensive side of his game. But he can also defend. But when you're looking at Jake Gardner and the Toronto Maple Leafs D as a whole, that was their Achilles heel last year. And the goaltending, maybe you wanted it to be a little bit better, and maybe the scoring wasn't as balanced as it needed to be. They are a bit of a top-heavy team with the Bozak, Kessel, and Van Riemsdyk line, and that's why you saw them bring in some other players, and they're obviously expecting more out of guys like Clarkson. But you look at Jake Gardner, and you know he gets healthy scratched twice by Randy Carlisle, and obviously a guy like Stuart Percy has come in, and he's played better, and that's the guy that's really replacing Gardner in the lineup. But Jake Gardner is a guy who, he comes out of college, and he was originally drafted by Anaheim, and then he comes over to Toronto, and he's a guy that has, again, tons of talent, but he still makes plays that keeps him out of the lineup. And I think, you know, I don't expect Jake Gardner to be a healthy scratch many more times this year. I think this is Randy Carlisle telling a younger player, by not playing him, that you need to be better for us. And, you know, they bring in a guy like Roman Polak, and they bring in a guy like Stefan Robida, who might be one of those guys that's kind of scratched and plays, you know, as an older player. But for me, Jake Gardner hasn't played well enough, and I realize that he's only been in three games this year. But to me, for a player like him, sometimes making the simple play is the better play. And I think sometimes he likes to get into the rush too much. And, you know, for me, he's someone, the key players for this team are Morgan Rielly and Jake Gardner on the back end. Because Dion Phaneuf played too much last year. And he makes mistakes, and I know his mistakes seem to be micro-analyzed like everything is in Toronto. But to me, I think Jake Gardner will be part of this defense going forward. I think Randy Carlisle, and again, you know, he didn't like what he saw, so he benched him. And I think, you know, yeah, sure, it's going to be overblown because of the contract, as you mentioned. He was given lots of money. But I wouldn't, by any stretch of the imagination, think Jake Gardner's on his way out of Toronto.
All I will say, and we're going to bring in Michael Tracos in the next segment, it just seems to me there's a disconnect here between the front office in Toronto, who jumped to the opportunity to give Jake Gardner a lot of money,
yeah, that's a good
and
point.
A lot of years, and Randy Carlisle. And I think if you put yourself in Jake Gardner's shoes, who are you listening to? Because you got a coach who you're not sure if he's going to stick around. You think you might outlast him. And you've got a front office that already invested in you. And he's a young guy. And I know we get into it with Evander Kane, and you can't use age, but I mean, he's a 22, 23-year-old guy with a ton of money thrown his way. It's kind of hard then to go back and try and change him. We'll ask Michael Tracos about it. He writes to the National Post. He covers the Leafs. And he's up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Nice tune. Nice tune, M. Remus. What's this tune called, Remus?
Cool in the Gang by Cool in the Gang.
Seriously, the song's called Cool in the Gang?
Yes.
Nice tune, Remus.
Whether or not it's off the album called Cool in the Gang, that remains to be seen.
Huh. Good stuff. Just before we get back into it here, Drew and Richie are away, by the way. Shuffled lines here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Matt Leibel in the host, your guest today. It's fantastic. It's been fantastic. Ezzie Ginsberg on the right wing, Dave Minuk on the left wing, Remus and Net, and on D. And picking tunes. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more info, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. The Wi-Fi, but the meat is fantastic.
Yeah, we've had some issues with the Wi-Fi. Remus didn't like it when we did the hockey pool there.
I know.
About 3 weeks ago, but
yeah.
You don't go there for the Wi-Fi.
No, you don't.
You go there for the corned beef.
It's not called Bernstein's Wi-Fi.
Exactly.
It's called Bernstein's Deli.
It's not an internet cafe.
It's not, but
it's
a fantastic deli.
Are there internet cafes anymore?
In Europe,
In Europe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Europe.
Yeah.
Remus is making all these hand gestures because we have a guest on the line, so let's do it. Do your thing, Reem.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And bring in the man who had to wait on hold and suffer through 15 to 25 seconds of deli talk, Michael Trakos, at Michael_Trakos, covers the Maple Leafs in the NHL for the National Post, also a regular contributor to the Hockey News. Michael, thanks for the time and the patience today. How is your Saturday going?
It's going good. Every time, why is it like every time I'm on with you guys, I always leave hungry.
you and us both.
For something.
Well, you know, Richie and Drew are actually in your town right now, so you might want to connect with them and maybe let them know where the good deli is in Toronto.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a good deli in Toronto. Ooh. You might have to go to Quebec for that, to be honest.
Holy smokes!
It's like saying where the good mountain is in Ontario, and just it doesn't exist. So, I don't know. Where are those guys? I hear they're at a wedding, so maybe I'll have to do a little wedding crashing here and get some free booze and hang out with those guys.
Richie didn't bring a plus one, Michael, though, so you're welcome to go with him.
Sure thing.
Michael, we wanted to, in the last segment before we brought you in, we started just kind of getting ready for the conversation with our own little discussion about the Jake Gardner situation, which I'm sure between that and the goalies, which we're going to get to here, you and everyone in Toronto are probably sick of these conversations, but it's what's hot right now. What's your take on the relationship between Jake Gardner and Randy Carlyle? Just before you jump in there, I want you to react to kind of what I was saying. It just seems to me like there's an inconsistency between the front office and Carlyle in terms of the way Gardner has been viewed. And by that, I mean the contract extension in the offseason given to a young guy, and then a coach here who's kind of a lame duck situation, and Gardner thinking, well, maybe I just need to outlast Carlyle here and then everything will be better. Can you break down the whole situation and give us your take on Jake Gardner and Randy Carlyle and that whole relationship with the Leafs?
Well, I'll say this much. So management signed up to a five-year deal because they're thinking 5 years ahead or even a couple years ahead and saying during that time, Jake Gardner should be a top-pairing defenseman, and they have all the faith that he's going to get there. So now it's Randy Carlyle's job to get him there, essentially. And what makes it a little, or causes maybe a little wrinkle to the situation, is that Randy Carlyle, while he's trying to develop Gardner, he's also trying to coach for his job right now. So he's icing the best lineup out there possible. And the other thing about it is Jake Gardner plays a style that can really excite the fans and cause you to say, wow, sign this guy up for 5 years because he's incredible, the things he can do on the ice with his skating and his skill set. And yet he also has at least one or two brain farts a night where you're going, geez, there's a goal, and you can attribute it to Jake Gardner. So there's growing pains involved. And I think with any young player, Carlyle is weighing the good and the bad, and a lot of times he doesn't want to have that risk out there. So it's kind of a tricky situation because, like you said, you got a lame duck coach and you've got a player who should develop into a guy, but it's a matter of, are you willing to live with the bad sometimes?
Michael, the Leafs are in Detroit tonight for the second game of the back-to-back, and they lost to the Red Wings last night 4-1. James Reimer was in net. When you talk about the goaltending situation, I remember we were talking to you about James Reimer last year, and you weren't sure if he was going to still be in Toronto by the end of the year. And here we are, obviously, and he is signed, and he's still in Toronto. And it seems like after six games, the Leafs, each goaltender has played three games, but every season, it seems like if in any other market, if you have a 1A and a 1B goaltender, that's fine. And obviously, Jonathan Bernier hasn't played very well so far. He had that five-goal game loss, and they let in four goals. And who do you think is going to play tonight? And is that pretty much what we're going to see throughout the year? Randy Carlyle is going to go with whoever the hot goalie is.
Yeah, I think you're right. And in regards to Reimer, I thought he was honestly going to be in Winnipeg at this time right now when you were talking about his situation a long time ago. As far as him and Bernie, I think it's going to be a matter of who's playing better that week or that month. And like we just said before, Randy Carlyle is coaching for his job. He's not trying to make either guy happy or think. He's not thinking a couple years down the road and saying, okay, who's going to be my starter and how do I go about making sure he's my starter in the long term? I think ideally the Leafs are always going to be leaning towards Bernier because he plays a sounder style. It's not as scrambly, and he was a high pick for a reason, whereas Reimer has been getting the job done, but it also makes you nervous. So I think right now Bernier is going to get the start tonight, but as for who gets the start the night after, the next game, it's going to entirely depend on how well Bernier plays. And, you know, that's kind of a good situation. I know a lot of teams would rather have that number one guy and have him solidified, but when you're talking about two young goaltenders with some potential, I think it's great that they could be in a position to really push each other and make sure each one is earning the net. And I think we saw the good of that last year. It's just a matter of when both aren't going, that's when you have trouble.
Michael, when you look at this team and you've watched this team many times over the years, and we've only seen five games this year, but based on the moves the Leafs made, and they didn't make any major moves, but bringing in players like Daniel Winnick and then bringing Leo Komarov back on the third line, Mike Santarelli, players like this, acquiring Richard Panik off of waivers, do you see this team being more balanced now? Because as you know, in the past, this has been a top-heavy team with the Bozak-Kessel-Van Riemsdyk line.
Yeah, I think so. And they've got a real good third line. I know you're paying, it's got David Clarkson on it with Leo Komarov and Mike Santarelli, and David Clarkson at his salary point should be on the top two lines. But with that line, with Komarov, Clarkson, it's a real good grind line. And I think the Leafs have an ability now to play a third line and even play a fourth line and give them minutes. Whereas in the past, Randy Carlyle would have a Colton Orr on that last line and really not play them more than 4 minutes a night. So there is a lot more balance. We're just not seeing the actual goal scoring right now. And last night was a perfect example of it, where there were stretches in the first period, even the second period, where Toronto really had Detroit hemmed in, and they just couldn't pull the trigger on it. And saw the frustration last night. There was one dumb Leaf fan throw his jersey on the ice, and I think that's becoming like a bit of an epidemic here and in Edmonton. But it's kind of silly, because for 40 minutes, the Leafs were doing everything right, except they just couldn't get a puck past Jimmy Howard. So to be frustrated with that, I think it goes beyond this year. I think it goes beyond one game. It goes basically for the last 10 years or so. So the Leafs have to get over that. They really have to see that the team as it's designed right now, it's not a great team, but it's a team that should provide at least decent results and give the team, I guess, a fighting chance on most nights.
We're in conversation here with Michael Trakos of the National Post here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday afternoon, talking Maple Leafs with Michael. He covers them for the NP. Michael, someone who kind of intrigues me, and not just me, a lot of people on the Leafs lineup, is Nazem Kadri. And you're around this team a lot, obviously, as he was just mentioning. And Kadri had such a weird up and down story through a number of seasons. Now he's obviously with this team. But then I'm reading something in the offseason, getting ready for this NHL year, reading that Nazem Kadri, some people consider the number one coach killer in the NHL. Just so many things about this guy, and they don't all add up for me. Can you kind of make sense of Nazem Kadri and his role with the Leafs and his future with the Leafs from your point of view?
He's kind of like Evander Kane light.
Evander Kane light. I like that. Nice.
I don't think he's quite as good of a player as Evander Kane, although who knows, right? And we're talking young guys here who are still developing, but I don't think he's got quite as much controversy surrounding him, good or bad, and rightfully or wrongfully. But in the same sense, he still is a player that a lot of fans gravitate towards. And the idea of a coach killer, I haven't really heard that. I could see where it's coming from in the sense that, like we were talking about with Jake Gardner, Kadri plays another style that is very exciting, and you can see flashes of star potential there, or at least top line potential, and yet he also has the turnover that will kill you. And he plays that kind of, I guess, balancing act where you're going, oh, just dump it in every now and then. You don't have to try to deke through all five guys on the ice on the opposition. So, I personally like Nazem Kadri. I don't know if he's going to ever be or grow into a top-line guy, but as a 25-goal, 55-point second-line center, I think he's a perfect fit. It's just a matter of putting him with the right guys and maybe not expecting the world out of him.
Michael, we wanted to ask you about Dion Phaneuf, obviously the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. A lot of the reasoning behind acquiring players like Stefan Robida and Roman Polak was to kind of take some pressure off of him and ease the minutes from Dion Phaneuf and allow him to focus, I guess, a little bit more on his own game. Have you seen a different Dion Phaneuf this year, and do you think his play has improved even though it's still early?
Yeah, I think what you see is what you get out of him. I don't think he's going to grow into anything more. I think at his age and how many years he's played in the league, you can put him with anyone short of, I guess, Duncan Keith or a Drew Doughty, and you're not going to get much more out of him. And as far as Robitaille is concerned, or some of the offseason acquisitions, well, Robitaille was out of the lineup last night. I don't even think he's going to get in the lineup tonight. And Roman Pollock hasn't looked good since he's come to Toronto. So it's not even Dion is the problem right now. It's the problem are the new offseason acquisitions. And right now they've got Cody Franzen playing with Dion Phaneuf, and I don't think that's a long-term match made in heaven. I think ideally you'd love for Jake Gardiner to kind of take that next step and be the kind of guy where Phaneuf can just give Gardiner the puck and have him skate up the ice and do a lot of the heavy lifting, but we're not there yet. So I think right now we're in almost a stopgap period with the defense right now.
Michael, Jersey incident aside, Leafs Nation is probably losing patience with this the team and the organization. How much longer do you think they're going to have to put up with it before the team can finally take the next step?
Oh, geez, man, that's a million-dollar question.
That's why I ask
it. It's like asking when Winnipeg is going to take that next step. And I think both franchises are quite similar in the sense where you're thinking, okay, is this still another five-year plan that's starting from year one, or are we getting closer? And I don't think we know the answer. It just seems like both teams are spinning their wheels to an extent. And I think that's where the frustration lies. You can't see a path going, okay, we're 3 years away and things are going to be going well. It's just management keeps turning over in Toronto and coaches keep coming and going and players keep coming and going, but we're not seeing any kind of tangible results or a real, like I said, you can't really look beyond a year or two and say, okay, that's where things are going to get good, because you just don't know.
Michael, love the insight. Love these conversations that we get to have with you. Thanks for coming on IC today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, awesome, guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Michael.
Go get a bite to eat. He said he's always hungry. Michael Tracos covering the Leafs and the NHL for the National Post. We'll break. We got one segment to go. We always close the show with rapid fire and cheers and jeers. We got some good stuff there. Dave, Ezzy, Matt with you. Remus on the board. Final segment of a Legal Curve Hockey Show around the corner here on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hi. It's a tradition around these parts, except for last week when Remus dropped the ball. I heard that. Bruce Springsteen to bring us back to our final segment of the IC Hockey Show. By the way, for all of your Winnipeg Jets and NHL news and notes, check out illegalcurve.com. Every morning, you'll see this thing called the Jets Morning Papers. Follow us on Twitter, at illegalcurve. Dave Minuk, who's in studio today, filling in with Richie and Drew away, updates that daily, multiple times daily.
Multiple times.
Jets Morning Paper is a great source of all of your Winnipeg Jets informations on a daily basis.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Matty.
I did okay.
Helps that I wrote it for you.
You did. I also wrote Drew's exit thing, so I'm saving that. Because off the top of the show, I did my own little twist on the... On what? Mindy!
I
like what Mindy brings.
I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I kind of miss Drew a little bit.
Boy, based on the things you said earlier.
You rolling tape?
Yeah, is Remus rolling tape on that?
You know, we give Drew a hard time, but, you know, at the end of the day, he's our friend.
Maybe your friend. Maddie's cousin.
Yeah, everybody's my cousin, it seems. We were talking about that earlier. Drew's my cousin. Anyway.
It feels like your bar mitzvah was just yesterday.
Were you there?
Of course.
I figured you might have been.
Was that your sister's bat mitzvah, too?
Aw, you're a mensch.
I'm down with the libels.
He does. He is. He always will be. Oh, yeah. We're kind of on the clock here. So, Remus, help us get into rapid fire, my man.
Rapid fire.
Okay, we got three things to get through here, and let's try and do this rapidly, Ezra. Number one. Last Thursday, the Detroit Free Press reported that the last major holdout creditor in Detroit's bankruptcy case will get to redevelop the Joe Louis Arena site under terms of a deal struck aimed at speeding the city's exit from bankruptcy court. According to the report, Joe Louis will be demolished in 2017 after the Red Wings relocate to a new arena in the Cass Corridor area. The project will also include a hotel and riverfront condominiums. How sad will you be to see this arena go? Ezra Ginsberg?
I'm going to be very sad to see this arena go because I'm a nostalgic type of guy. And I know Dave M because he was doing law school in Michigan, went to Joe Louis Arena a bunch of times. I've never been there. And I was talking to you guys off air about this. I've been to quite a few NHL arenas. Nassau was one of the older arenas that obviously the Islanders are moving to the Barclays Center. But to me, there's three more years there. I got to go check out Joe Louis Arena because to me, there's so much history there. And it is going to be a sad, you know, exit because I think Nassau, there's a lot of memories in Nassau, the Stanley Cups and all that. But you think about Detroit, all those good Detroit Red Wings teams in the late 90s, they still have a pretty good team now. You know, all of those great teams with Fedorov and Yzerman. And so it's going to be sad. But the flip side of that is it's great news for the city of Detroit. The city of Detroit, guys, and Dave, you can speak to this more than I can. It's gone through some rough times, the economy and all that. So it's great news to see that this arena deal is progressing and they're going to get a new building.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun going to Joe Louis Arena. Always had a great time. The seats are actually really good. Like, there's never a bad seat. They had great deals for students. So you could go day of, get tickets for like $15, get the best seats in the house that were available.
You should tell your Gordie Howe story.
Well, one time I was at a Wings and Flyers exhibition game just before the Wings were taking off for Sweden, and I was in the media press box, and I was walking down to do post game, and I didn't really know where to go. I was actually with a Swedish reporter who was covering the game in advance of the trip, and I'm walking down the stairs, and I didn't know which way to go, and he didn't know which way to go. So I'm like, you had two options, right or left. And so we figured there's people behind you on the stairwell. So I figured I'd wait. I get a little tap on my shoulder, and he goes, "Young fella, if you go to the right, the police are going to come. So you want to go to the left." It was Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey.
An awesome story.
Yeah, yeah. And he was a really nice guy. And I mean, it's just a cool building. And you know what? I have to say, like, I really enjoyed Detroit. I never felt unsafe there. I went to a lot of games and stuff. So it's good for the city. It's nice. It's actually it's actually a nice spot. I've walked around there a lot. I never felt unsafe. So
let's move on to number two. I'm going to jump, guys. I'm going to save the second one for last. Let's go to this one. Earlier this week, TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger provided an update on the 2016 World Cup of Hockey. Dreger says that the NHL, NHLPA, and IIHF met in New York, but an official announcement is still at least a week away. Because it is still unknown, how many countries should participate, and what is your preferred format for this tournament?
I think there should be less teams than the Olympics, and this is why. I think that it should be more of an elite tournament, getting back to maybe more of the kind of the Canada Cup years, but I'm going to say that there should be six teams, not eight, and I think there might be eight. But I think, and we talked about this last year on the show, I think that the format should be such that the finals are best of five. And I know that might be tough with the time constraints, and it's probably going to be before the season. But I think I'd like to see, you know, everyone wants to see that Canada-US, Canada-Russia, obviously assuming Canada's in the final. Might not be Canada, but it's a good bet. So I think that there should be six teams. And I hope that there's a best of three semifinal and a best of five final, because I think then you would really get to see the rivalry in its best form.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I would like to see a Canada 1 and a Canada 2, because I really think Canada is so strong that you could feel the Canada 2 team without problem. I mean, they do it in luge. They do it in bobsled. Why can't we have a Canada 2 hockey team?
I didn't know that you were a big luge fan.
Oh, I'm a loser.
He's a loser.
Pure looters.
Dang, you got in there ahead of me. Last one. Next week, 28-year-old goaltender Shannon Zabados is expected to make her season debut for the Columbus Cottonmouths of the Southern Professional Hockey League. Zabados played two games for the team last season and posted respectable numbers. 355 goals against, .894 save percentage. Respectable. Zabados backs up Team Canada's women's hockey team to Olympic gold in Sochi. The real question is, will we ever see a female play a regular shift in the NHL, AHL, or junior hockey?
I think we will. And I think there's a better chance that we see that in junior hockey or a lesser league. But guys, we've seen, and I love this story. Shannon Zabados is a great goaltender. I love watching her play. I think she's arguably the best goaltender, female goaltender of all time. And she's obviously won the gold medal for Team Canada. She's playing in the Southern Professional Hockey League, which is a step below the Central Hockey League, which is a step below the ECHL, step below the AHL. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's out of the realm. And to me, this is such a great story because it's great for aspiring young females who want to play professional hockey. So first we saw Manon Raym 22 years ago. Then we saw Haley Wickenheiser, arguably the greatest female hockey player of all time, mm-hmm. play professional in Finland. She even got a tryout for the Philadelphia Flyers at one point. and now we're seeing Shannon Sabados playing in the Southern Professional Hockey League. So I think it's a long shot to say there's going to be a female in the NHL, but you know what the saying is, you know, never say never.
Never say never. Okay. Well, I don't think it'll ever happen. We got time for cheers and jeers, Reem. Let's do it.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
All right, Ezzy, you're up first. We got to go fast. Cheers and jeers.
Pascal Dupuis had a scary incident on Thursday night. He was stretchered off, but it looks like he's okay. He was practicing Friday.
So are you're cheering him?
Yeah, I'm cheering Dupuis because he's healthy.
Right on. Dave Minuk?
I'm keeping it local. I'm cheering Richard Pollock. Love the Saturday Spotlight section. This news feature we're doing on Illegal Curve, it's fantastic.
And I'm going to cheer Andrej Pavlik. I know it's Andre. I'm just kidding around. The guy takes a lot of heat when things don't go well, but the Jets are 1-3, and you know what? Pavlik is not to blame. He's actually been very solid. I thought he was very good last night. Other than Scheifele, probably the best Jet. So you know what? Good for Andrej Pavlik coming out with a strong start to the season. I hope it continues, because if he plays well, the Jets are way closer to making the playoffs. Of course, now they have to score some goals. We'll see if they do that tomorrow night. Jets Flames, 6 p.m., TSN 1290, and at MTS Center. Coming up at 4 o'clock here today, the Blue Bomber Game Day Show. Westwood, Wallaby, bombing 2 hours ahead of 6 o'clock kickoff between the Stampeders and Bombers. But it's been a great day here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and Michael Remus. I'm Matt Leibel. It's been great. Thanks, guys, for letting me come in here and sit with you guys and chat with you guys for 3 hours, and to all our guests as well. Check out IllegalCurve.com, TSN1290.ca for podcasts. And just remember, if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.